Welcome everyone to Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thank you for joining us here on Productivity Book Group or listening along via the podcast. Today we will be discussing the 12-week year. Get more done in 12 weeks than others do in 12 months by Brian P. Moran and Michael Weddington. And so just to kick off the conversation for everybody, what were your initial reactions to the book's first half? And so we're discussing chapters 1 through 13 today, and the book goes through sort of this, the methodology up front before they really talk about implementing the plan in the second half of the book. So I'm just curious, what were anyone's responses to sort of the first half of the book's theory behind the 12-week year?
This is Margaret, and I had read some of the online reviews of it and wasn't sure what I was going to think about it. But I started it because they were like, it's too superficial or it's too quick or it's too lightweight. But I started it and got about four pages in and went, he's absolutely right. It's what I do today that makes a difference. And I put down the book and went and tackled the project I'd been putting off. So it's already well worth the price of the book for me.
There you go.
I was a little not clear that the first part was really just sort of a high-level overview. So I was like, wow, he's expecting a lot of, you know, write your vision statement. Okay, next. But then I realized in the second half of the book, they're going into more how to go about doing that kind of stuff. So I am liking it a whole lot better than I thought I was going to, even though it's not like groundbreaking, brand new content. It mm-hmm. just seems to be hitting me at the right time.
Yeah, it's really curious because, you know, from my perspective, he doesn't, at least from my reading, he doesn't actually say that he's going to go over this stuff in detail until I think about chapters 5 or 6 when he finally says something or they finally say something to the effect of, you know, we're going to go into this later and we'll sort of deep dive into some of this material later. But you really don't know that the high level stuff is not the end of their discussion on it. And I think that that's where a lot of people drop off and they don't get to the real meat of the book, which is, you know, getting deeper in and the actual, you know, going into the tactics and understanding how to implement and how to write a vision plan and all those things. So I completely understand that.
Hey, it's Michelle.
Hi.
This is actually my second reading, and this is because it was brought up on productivity community in the Google Plus world by Bob Sankey, and it sounded so exciting. So I remember I read it and I tried to implement, and I think it's an exciting way of looking at accomplishing stuff, as if, you know, some of us aren't already A-type enough already, but it seems like a really great way to just really stay focused on a few key things instead of being all over the map and trying to do everything. So I liked it for that. And in the second read, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try this again. So it's very exciting, actually.
That's great to hear. And when Bob Sankey originally brought up the book, it's what triggered me to add it to the reading list for this year. And I thought, oh, well, this will be really a great book to read and to read with Productivity Book Group, having it already read it the prior year. And so, you know, it's really interesting to see the way in which certain people respond to the concept of annualized thinking. And so I wanted to actually sort of see everyone's opinions about what and how they have in the past planned. Do you all plan using an annual planning concept? Have you done that kind of thing in the past, or do you not do an annual plan? How do you sort of manage the planning, the larger planning scale of your life now versus perhaps implementing the 12-week year concept?
This is Michelle. This was the first year that I actually did a full-on like end of year review. And then sort of planned for the future. But I do generally have big horizon stuff planned out, or at least thought about. So at least I'm working towards those things. So I think part of what the issue was for me over the years has been like big goals are hard to attain, right? They're hard to get to because it's hard to see the progress, I guess. And it's sort of the same thing you were talking about, how like, you know, when it's, if you think about it like in a project at work or something like that, there's so much time that you think, oh, I've got time to get that done, you know, like there's plenty of time. And then all of a sudden you're in crunch mode, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with kind of everything. If it's all such big planning and so far out there, it's so easy to put it on the back burner because there's other things on fire. So I like this as a way of sort of refocusing and saying, okay, you know, everything's kind of a 12-week push, you know. So it's not so far off in the distance, and you see progress, and you're measuring it. So I think that's all very interesting.
And this is Margaret. I've personally not really done sort of the annual planning thing, but more rather periodic. Okay, we've finished this big project or reached this goal we were aiming towards. Kind of what do we want to do next? More sort of a rolling thing, but nothing nearly as structured or intentional as this. But on the business side, I mean, in accounting, year end, you always, it doesn't matter what kind of company you're at, it's like everybody sets their tails on fire in November and goes crazy for the last 6 weeks of the year. And it's like, come on, can we not like spread this thing out throughout the year? And so I really like the framework. Because especially what he said too about, you know, if you've got a really big goal and you realize in October you're not going to make it, there is a tendency to just sort of give up and say, oh, well, you know, it was too big. But if you're doing, and he made a real point about you're not doing quarterly goals. You know, each 12-week period is tied into the great big picture, but it's not like quarterly goal setting in an annual cycle. It's here's our brand new 12-week set. What are we going to do in this set that moves to this thing that may take 5 or 6 or 7 12-week cycles to get to. So I'm very intrigued by it. I have done a couple of the big year-end reviews. I didn't do one this year, and some, you know, big kind of GTD quarterly review type of things that have been very valuable. But I think because they have been so detached from kind of an overall overarching structure that I've done like maybe one quarterly review a year. And I get so excited by it. I don't know what happens. I don't do the next one. It maybe scares me. You know?
Right. There's a lot of overwhelm associated.
Yeah. And so I like this, that it's kind of it seems a little more structured than doing the quarterly review, because then it gives you the, okay, here's what we're going to do. And you're not having to tackle 12 months of thinking all at once.
Right. Right. Yeah. For me, go ahead.
No, it's all right. Go ahead, Ray.
No, go ahead, Michelle.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that what I've heard, like I've heard some criticism of the book, and I think it's been more so like people thinking that something that you would normally tackle in a one year space is now got to happen in a 12-week space. I think that's a misunderstanding of the premise of the book. It's not that you're trying to, you know, instead of selling your house in a year, sell it in 12 weeks. It's not that.
All right.
it's about trying to really focus so that you're not wasting that first 12 weeks and not actually moving on getting your house sold. It's sort of just, it's a way of really like honing in and making sure that you're making progress and meeting some goals along the way. So yeah, it's the same thing. It's not quarterly reviews building up to an annual, because then it's the same thing of like, oh, we'll do it next quarter. This is not the crunch quarter yet. Right.
And this is Margaret, to build on that, the idea where he said, you know, when you've only got 12 weeks, you can only have like one or two bad weeks and still have a good 12-week year.
Uh-huh.
Whereas when you're looking at the whole scope of the full year, what's a bad week or two? You know, it seems like such a small piece. Whereas if you're really focusing in on the, it's what you do every single day that's what's moving you forward, you don't want to lose a day. You don't want to lose a week, not on purpose. You know, you can take the time off. You can do the different things. But you don't want to be just oblivious to the passage of time, I think, is one of the big things for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree.
Yeah, I was going to say about my own sort of planning process. It is an annual process. I sort of disagree with the premise of annualized thinking as being flawed at its core, although I really like the idea of the 12-week year, and I think I'm going to actually try it. The reality is that from my perspective over the last you know, now almost 15 years, I've followed, you know, an ever-evolving plan. What I've always known is that, you know, if I try to use the calendar year end, it's always going to be flawed to try and plan because, you know, basically November happens, and by the time, you know, the end of November comes, you know, both I have a birthday and the Thanksgiving holiday, and then, of course, all of the winter holiday season, you know, with, you know, all the holidays there that just take up the rest of the year. So it's really not that I am all that productive and sprint toward the end of the year anyway. It's that I feel like there's a huge unproductive space in those 2 months of the year that I actually started just in September deciding that I would end my year early. And that way I would do what I call a sprint. You know, so they call it a 12-week year, I call it a sprint. And the sprint is, what can I achieve in this time frame prior to November, you know, basically mid-November. And that allowed me to set goals for the coming year, sprint to November, sometime mid-November, and I've now clocked the end of my year in October 31st, and I've probably said this on Productivity Book Group before, but the point is that I end the year on October 31st, so Halloween, I celebrate, and then I have a chance to start fresh my new year on November 1, knowing that I have 2 weeks left of time to sort of just like, you know, get what I need to get sort of foundationally set. And then, you know, I have the holiday seasons. I get things done, but, you know, it's the holiday seasons. And then January comes and I can pick up where I started off mid-November and, you know, or wherever I left off, wherever at the end of the year. And I don't feel that drag or even that motivation to get to year end, mostly because none of my companies fall on a fiscal year end basis that falls with calendar year, so I don't have to worry about that. And really, at the end of the day,
that's a huge difference.
It does. It makes a very, very large difference for me. And because of that, then all of the other pieces, you know, the idea of like, oh my gosh, I have, you know, 12 months of tasks that I've outlined for whatever. I don't do that because I'm a GTD-er. So, you know, I'm going to have goals based on, you know, and then projects, and those projects are going to be set over the course of the year. And then in my weekly reviews are when I'm going to really create the tasks associated with moving things week to week. So I don't feel that pressure or that increased motivation based on that concept of like annualized thinking being something that, oh, I have all year to get, you know, whatever done. I presume I only have 10 months. And then based on that 10 months, I look at it from a perspective of what can I get done with vacation in mind and with whatever. And that's really a Neil Fiore concept of basically taking the chunks of time out and leaving what's left so that you can really see that you really don't have that much time and you should take advantage of that. And I think that's what you were going for in saying, you know, sort of Margaret saying, you know, like sort of living in the moment and knowing what you have now. And so that's sort of my system. And I think that the 12-week year can really be very valuable to people, though. So, you know, when I look at it from its own perspective, I think that it can be really valuable. And I was sort of curious. You had talked about not having couldn't have a bad week. But he mentions at some point, or they mention at some point, the authors, about the idea of having a bad 12 weeks. And I was sort of curious about people's thoughts on that. Like when you go through, if you were to sort of mentally, you know, future perceive yourself going through those 12 weeks and having had a bad 12 weeks, that is, you know, just life happens, and you come out not achieving the goal or goals that you set in that 12-week plan, How do you feel like someone should respond to that? How do we overcome that sort of huge failure?
This is Margaret. I think one of the cool things with this as the way they lay it out is you catch it after 12 weeks. I mean, if you're analyzing, if you're, you know, keeping doing the scorecard and stuff like that, you catch it, you're aware of it, it doesn't drag on forever, and you've got a real intentional opportunity to sort of reboot and recalibrate and move on.
That's
and he also mentioned, like, you're not shooting for perfection but excellence. So you're really, you should expect that you're going to meet, like, 85, that you're shooting for 85% of your goal and not going to reach the full goal, which is actually a little I want to say discomforting for me, being a professional.
Also.
Being a perfectionist, because I'm like, well, why wouldn't you reach your entire goal, right? So, like, you're right, but it's interesting because the reality is you're not going to, like, you don't have 100% control over everything. So obviously, some things are just not gonna, you know, make it to the end goal. But you'll make significant progress, right? And the thing is, the beauty of it is that it keeps you in that mode of, like, really trying to hit those end goals. You know, and that's not for everybody, but if that helps motivate you to, you know, push forward on projects, then maybe it's really a great little system for it, you know? Because, like, for me, projects that are so far, so far into the future, it's hard to keep the day-to-day in motion. And like Margaret was saying, like, you know, if you did have a bad, you know, 12 weeks, this gives you a chance to really reset and be like, okay, obviously, you know, either I was reaching too far or blah, 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 whatever the thing might be, and recalibrate. And then you don't have to have such a crappy next 12 weeks.
Right,
you know?
Right. No, I know I've had several crappy 12 weeks in the past couple of years, and, you know, the ability to rebound would have been really, you know, if I had had that perspective, I think that it would have been really great to recalibrate very quickly. And, you know, so I like the idea of having sort of a shorter period in which to review, even though, you know, I have a quarterly review that's scheduled and all of those things. It's just not the same, I think, from this concept, and which is why it really seems to work really well in my mind that it's something that I want to try. Because, you know, when you have a bad 12 weeks, it's really easy to beat yourself up and to lack compassion for both yourself and others in those moments. And the idea of sort of a reset, that it's a bigger concept, you know. And again, I'm probably in my mind still going to call it a sprint, because that's just what I've always characterized it as in my own mind, this idea of turning anything that's not an annual plan into a smaller subset of my year. But, you know, sort of the idea of recasting it as its own year doesn't work for me. I can't think outside of that perspective so easily, maybe over time. But the idea of a sprint to an end goal, and, you know, to know that, okay, I didn't get there, maybe I even reached the 85%, but like you, Michelle, the perfectionist in me is going to, you know, have some level of, like, you failed, you know.
Yeah.
That's a moment to have compassion and to celebrate where you got, and then to start again. I then flip the coin and think about sort of the, he talks about when you have a good 12 weeks and you reach your goal, and he talks about sort of celebrating. And I was curious about what folks thought about that and really the overlap between the weeks, because, you know, the reality is that if you start a 12-week year, when do you stop and celebrate, and when do you start your next 12-week year? And, you know, what's sort of the middle ground there for you? Do you start your planning? Do you think you would start your planning for the next 12 weeks before you even got done with your first 12 weeks? And when do you celebrate? Do you celebrate post 12 weeks, or do you celebrate in the last 12 week, you know, week of the 12 weeks? What do you think you do?
This was Margaret. He said something about, and I may have been when I was flipping through the rest of the book, just kind of see where it went, where he said, really, to get to the 52 weeks of the year, you've actually got 13 weeks, you know, four 13-week periods. So you do your 12-week year or your 12-week sprint, and then you have that 13th week to celebrate, regroup, get ready, and then go into the next 12 weeks. And I thought, that kind of makes sense.
The last 4 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense as one way to do it. I like the idea, though, of stopping and acknowledging, because the job that I just finished was a flat-out sprint for the entire 10 months I was there. And there was never a chance to catch your breath, you know, of, okay, this major milestone's been accomplished. Yay, let's celebrate before we dive into the next thing. It was like, okay, next. But someplace I worked in Denver, when we had accomplished, we had achieved some kind of certification with the workers' comp stuff and the state cost containment, whatever. I don't remember exactly what we'd done, but it had been a big push, and we achieved it. And one of the team members in the group was like, okay, now we need to celebrate. Like, we need to do what? We need to celebrate. And it cemented that as, oh, yeah, we actually did accomplish something, and it's done now. And so we've got closure on it. We've acknowledged it, and now we can move on to the next thing. So I love the idea of actually celebrating, acknowledging, you know, and taking even a little pause to acknowledge what's been accomplished before just diving into the next thing.
Yeah, I've always talked about rewards in a way of using it as a motivation tool, but in reality, it should also be characterized as a celebration tool, you know. And I think that there's something very, very powerful about that concept. That as I was reading the book this time around, I thought, you know, there's not just a motivational situation here or accountability situation here or any of those things. It's really a moment to feel gratitude for yourself and for the people around you, and then just to revel in success. You know, I think that in and of itself is its own reward. And so I really like that concept. It really resonated with me. And so I'm gonna play devil's advocate here, because I was going through my notes in the book and I kept writing arbitrary. and one of the things is that, you know, this concept of a 12-week year is really what many people in the productivity community talk about in terms of arbitrary deadlines. And they may not use that term, arbitrary deadlines, but that's what I say in my own head. And I'm sort of curious from that perspective, how do you overcome sort of the arbitrariness of the deadline concept? Because the 12-week year is really arbitrary. I mean, while Brian Primoran and Michael Ennington might have great success with their clients in seeing this concept implemented, I don't see 12 weeks, you know, a quarter of a year's time being all that perfect in any way, shape, or form versus, say, 6 weeks or even 2 weeks or, you know, whatever it might be, 4 months instead of, you know, I'm sorry, you know, whatever the additional months are, you know, versus another set of months. I'm curious, what do you feel about sort of the arbitrariness of 12 weeks in using that as a platform for making it your year? Or disagreeing with me because you don't believe it's arbitrary.
Well, I would assume that the 12 weeks is to match the 12 months. Right.
Right. Yeah. So 12 weeks is a good, you know, sort of matching of January through December. So how do you sort of see that perspective for yourself then? Do you represent each week as sort of a month in your mind?
No, but see, that's exactly what I was talking about. Like, I think people think that now I have to do everything that I would have done in January in week one, and that's not what it's about.
Right. I mean, you can't possibly. Yeah, you can't possibly. But I mean, in terms of creating some relationship to what you already know, or do you like completely like? Okay, that's good. That's what I'm asking. That's cool.
Yeah, I think it's.
I have a tough time with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more about just saying like, okay, I'm creating, you know, end goals for a 12-week period. You know, I mean, they have to use something kitschy to make it make sense to people, right? So, right? So, like, 12-week year. I mean, like, that made me want to read the book, for sure. So I think it's just about, like, you know, developing plans to and goals to meet within that time frame, within a 12-week time frame, and then sort of, and really, like, he gets more into it later in the book about how to really lay that out across the weeks and how to keep on top of it and all that stuff. So I'm excited to reread that as well. But, you know, it's less, yeah, and I think that's the big thing, like, You have to separate from the idea of a year as you know a year to be, because then you're just going to really be like, oh my God, I got to get all of January done in week one. I need to get a quarter's worth of work done in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Like, and that's just unrealistic.
Right. Yeah. And so that's where I'm guessing, while the title is, you know, it has a wow factor to it and makes me come to it, the terminology itself is a little confusing for me then. And I I think that's probably why I'm going to, in my mind's eye, change the terminology again to something like a sprint, because it doesn't then make me think of what you're talking about, Michelle, which is that I think a lot of people will do that. They'll be like, oh, okay, well, then I have to get January's work done in week one and then lose motivation because you're overwhelmed. You know, your entire neural network goes crazy about, you know, how can you possibly get that done? And then you fail right out the gate. And, you know, I don't want to have false starts if I'm really going to try and implement this concept. And so I'm going to really just change the terminology, because I really think that the idea of using week or year in any language for me is always going to make me think of 7 days, and that means
312 months.
Yeah, exactly, 12 months.
Yeah, but I think that it's also built in to give yourself sort of that internal pressure to really, like, to equate your week one with a month of effort. In a sense, I know this is sounding exactly opposite of what I just said, but my point is, there was one section where he's talking about that, and he says, or they were talking about that, and they say, like, and what Margaret mentioned earlier, you don't want to waste a week because that equates to a month. It's like as if you just sat on your butt all of January, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of equating, you know, a month to the 1 week is just to give yourself enough pressure that you're not wasting days, you're not wasting minutes, you're really on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I think for myself, go ahead, Margaret.
No, go ahead, keep going.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, my thought is to look at it from 12 segments within the sprint, you know, like sort of like a, you know, because I'm a runner, I think about everything from a running analogy. And so the idea is, like, if I have, you know, if I have 12 legs to a race, or, you know, 12 laps or whatever it might be, I'm going to think about it as a sprint with laps. And each of those laps is a week. And therefore, then I can, you know, look, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do this leg of the lap of the sprint, you know, and that way it's every day is still broken down in the same way, but it's giving me motivation to run that length, as opposed to thinking about that day associated with that week, associated with that month. I just can't make that, you know, that's definitely a me thing. It's not anybody else. So everybody else might be perfectly fine with it. I just can't, for some reason, the terminology just doesn't work with me. But I think I'm going to try that and see if it helps reduce some of the anxiety associated with, you know, the relationship between the two. But I really like the sample plans that are on the website. Say again?
Yeah, I looked at the sample plans too, and that helps clarify it before I realized they were going to go into more detail in the second half of the book. But what I was going to say too about the 12-week year, I think they're trying to get away from 90-day goals, which is about the same time frame. You know, 90 days is about 13 weeks. It's like a day short. So
right.
12, but we don't tend to think in 90-day chunks of time. Because 90 days isn't exactly a number of weeks. I mean, I get what a week is, you know, and I get what a month is, and I understand a quarter, you know. But 90 days in terms of a planning horizon, you know, then if you're breaking stuff down, you're having to do extra kind of mental stuff to figure out what the week is. You can't just say, you know, count your 90 days off, and I'm going to do this every day of the 90 days, because you've got weekends, you've got holidays and things like that. So I think it's a way to kind of take that 90-day goal concept and shift it just a little bit to give it into time buckets that line up consistently, so that you've got 12 weeks. And I'm with you. I'm never going to be able to call it a 12-week year, that I've got 4 years in a year, but a 12-week planning period, 12-week goals, 12-week, you know, sprints, to use your analogy, 12-week, you know, buckets, 12-week anything. But I like the 12 weeks and the fact that you can stack periods of 12 weeks on top of each other, and they're all going to have the same number of weeks in them. And you don't have to worry about, okay, this 90-day period starting on a Wednesday. You know, so how do I figure out what needs to happen in this first week of this 90 days? It's all in buckets that are the same size. Your weekly sprints or your weekly chunks of work are all the same size. And I like that a lot. But I'm not ever going to call it a 12-week year either.
Yeah, and it's really interesting for me because I think about it from the perspective of, like, shaking things up. And it's about really shaking things up on a more frequent basis with control, you know. So this is like, you know, good old-fashioned David Allen language of control versus perspective or control and perspective, you know, which is like having enough of both so that you can, but you can go into the crazy maker visionary quadrant of the GTDQ more often while maintaining all of the other quadrants of your world, you know. And I think that there's something really valuable to it. You know, I think that, you know, maybe the 12-week year from what you're talking about, both of you are talking about, makes it less arbitrary than not. You know, like, I think that there's something valuable to the 12-week concept. And yeah, I really like the idea of one, you know, shaking things up. But the other side is that you're actually working sort of rogue. You're sort of a rebel comparative to the rest of the workforce. And I think that also, you know, sets you apart. And I think there's something about that in any work environment, whether you're a solopreneur or you're working in a large corporate environment, you're dealing with other people, and your being and pushing differently at them is going to get them to be more productive as well. And so there's that ripple effect of, wow, what's going on there? Michelle is totally rocking the house with this project. We need to get our stuff together so that we can make that happen. And I think there's something really valuable to that. The next thing in my notes here that I was reading was, of course, his discussion of a vision and, or their discussion of a vision and talking about sort of the personal versus business and how they're sort of intertwined. Did anyone resonate with that? Does anybody feel like once we get to that part of the book where we actually, you know, start to write our personal and business visions, what you'll feel about that?
This is Michelle. I was when I was rereading it and seeing my highlights, because I did it in Kindle and I had highlighted it, I remembered how inspired I was actually by all the vision talk. I thought it gave me a really great perspective on stuff. And I can't, of course, remember exactly why right now, but I remember feeling really inspired and really excited to sit down and sort of have a clearer vision on all of my important projects. So I think I remember there being a couple of steps, like he walked you through steps of thinking about the vision and stuff. I think Bob Stanky wrote the book. That's why I keep saying he.
That's funny.
Well, and the author, and the author keeps saying I. So he doesn't.
Oh.
They did not write it with a we voice. They wrote it with an I voice.
Oh.
Right. So all the examples are I, blah, blah, blah. He occasionally says we have great success with our clients, but most of it is written in the first person. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll get to chapter 13 before we close out the call, but I wanted to sort of talk about the high level stuff, and it's really wonderful that it was inspiring to get you to want to do it, you know, because I know that we've talked in the past about it and it hasn't been something that was really high priority. And, you know, I've always been a huge advocate for vision and mission statements, and it's just really wonderful to hear, you know, you excited about writing a vision statement. So that's great.
Oh, no. I'm not talking vision statement. I'm just saying for each of the projects, really having a clear understanding of what it is I'm aiming for and a clear goal. Like, really, because otherwise, and I'm not talking full-on statement, whole big creed, living, whatever.
No, not at all. And remember, I don't define a vision statement as being anything of any of grandeur. You know, that's not really the point behind it. So whatever you're doing to write down goals is just great to hear.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I've always been goal-oriented. It's just a matter of having more and more clarity on it, and then actually being able to execute to it. More so, I guess, you know, I'm always clear on what my goals are for a project and whatnot, but maybe a little less clear about my steps to getting to it. I don't know. That sounds crazy since I'm a project manager, but
No, I mean project management and organization is. No, but I think that's one of the things that's consistently misunderstood about project management. When people talk about project management, I have to frequently tell them that there's your project management, the professional project management that is, you know, working in a team environment, individual project management, and the task management. Those are three completely different worlds.
Even though
some of those principles can bleed over, as you frequently talked about, you know, the reality of trying to outline every task possible to get something to its end works in a project management professional perspective, but not on a personal level. You know, it's overwhelming, and that's something that you can do as a project management professional, and you have the software and the skill set, you know, the experience to be able to do something like that, and that's admirable. But when I try to do that, as I did in my early GPD implementation, that's a very, very overwhelming concept, and I would, you know, and I recommend everyone not to do that, and that's why the weekly review is so powerful. And but that's a clear misnomer among many people in the productivity community, is that those are the same things. So how about you, Margaret?
Because I'm so embedded in the project management world that it took a lot of effort to learn to not plan every single little thing out for a project. To leave room for, you know, I want to say spontaneity, but it's not really that. It's just to leave room for things to happen and natural surprises that may take you in a better direction than you were thinking, you know. So you need to leave room for that sort of stuff. But you also can't just completely be like, okay, well, we'll just see where it takes me. <You know? laughs> And I think that's what it was with the vision planning, or, you know, just even thinking that stuff out for a 12-week period. It was like, okay, I see where my end goal is. It felt really nice to be able to plan for a shorter period. In sort of a solid but not solid way, and I don't know how to explain that better, but that's that.
and I think that there's something valuable to that. How about you, Michelle? How about you, Margaret? In terms of vision and sort of the personal and business concepts, what were your sort of responses to that?
Yeah, I had done kind of the Covey thing years ago, and then I ran across all of my kind of. I don't remember if you called them affirmations or whatever, but kind of the statements in the various areas of life. It's like, huh, that'd be really interesting to go back through again. But I liked the way, and even though it's so obvious, again, there's so much in this book that is so obvious, but there's something about the way that they're saying it that it's just kind of going, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. I get that. the having the really clear personal vision then makes the work stuff the way you're saying kind of gives you the foundation for the work stuff, gives you the why for why you're doing some of the work stuff. And I knew that, but it was good to read it and kind of go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Having both of those pieces, that it's not just about what are the goals and the vision for the job, but starting more foundationally with the goals and vision for your life, and then how does the job stuff, the career stuff, fit in with that. Mm-hmm. I thought was really pretty cool. So, and again, not anything new, but it just hit me differently this time from other things I've read in the past or thought about it in the past.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yes, I may go kind of scrub through my old Covey stuff and see how much of it's still relevant.
Well, you'd be surprised about how interesting it is, not just from a relevance perspective, but when you go back through your plans of prior years, whether that be a vision mm-hmm. statement, a mission statement, or any other kind of written document of what you plan to do, they are very enlightening. And that's really one of the things that I enjoy about planning in general, and I probably plan too much, but that's just because I enjoy it so much. But the reality is that when you look at a plan that you've written in the past, you know, okay, I looked at this, under the set of circumstances, you know, these were the variables and these are the controls in my environment, sort of if you want to speak in scientific terms, and then, you know, I executed this experiment. and what happened, you know, and you know what happened now, and so you can go back and say, okay, well, are the same controls, are the same variables in, you know, here now, what happens every time you plan and execute, and you start to see patterns in your own behavior and in your own circumstances, the world around you, whatever, the people around you. And you can start to make better, you can make better plans. And what I've found is that my annual mission statement has evolved dramatically over the years. One way is, you know, they talk about writing your vision statement to match each of the sort of areas of your life. And as many of you who know me, I adhere to the idea of the, you know, the 20,000 foot level of getting things done and really thinking about those, that the areas of responsibility, the areas of focus, that concept, and paying attention to that horizon. And, you know, whether that's from the Covey concept of, the categories of life, the Tony Robbins concept of categories of improvement, you know, you really have these areas that you should be focusing on productivity-wise, and it's a huge foundation for me. So it was really easy for me to relate that and write the vision statement in line with that. Okay, this area of my life, this area of my life, this area of my life, really answering the question that making it all work talks about, you know, what do I need to maintain? And writing the answer for that in each of those perspectives. And it was really enlightening to write that this year, you know, in the midst of so many other things versus writing them in past years. So I found it to be a very, very, you know, an illuminating exercise. And the other thing about, you know, the real highlight of reading that section this time around again was him or they representing how important your business goals are to your personal goals, or vice versa, how important your personal goals are to your business. And that if you don't have a strong foundation in your personal vision, you're never really going to achieve the business stuff, you know, at least at the level you want to, because you forgot that this is all about you, you know, not to be selfish, but the reality is that we fundamentally are going to want to benefit from this personally. You know, it's not about just doing it for doing its sake. And I thought that was just it's such an important message to get out to people, is that you really do have to have some skin in the game personally to want to, you know, some investment on your part emotionally to want to really make that thing happen in whatever area of your life. And so I wanted to sort of push forward in our last 10 minutes or so and talk about the measuring part. He talks about keeping this weekly scorecard. And I'm curious, has anyone seen it, used it? What were your thoughts in terms of scorekeeping? They sort of make an analogy to sports. And not sort of, they do. They make an analogy to sports and keeping scorekeeping and all that other fun stuff. What were your thoughts about that chapter? I think it was chapter 6.
This is Margaret, and that is something I had done really consistently for about a year and a half with kind of a daily goal tracking app. I would maintain it every day, and then on Fridays I would sit down and update the spreadsheet I'd created and kind of do a red, yellow, green of where am I in these goals. Areas, I don't even know what to call them. I mean, some of them were habits I was trying to develop. Some of them was just work stuff I had to do and put in as, you know, chunks of time every week to stay on track. And I would do kind of a percentage of, you know, how much did I do, and is this an area that I'm drifting off on and I need to put more effort into. And it was great because I could look at it and go, we'll pick weekly review, for instance. Oh, look, I didn't do my weekly review this week. Okay, well, that's not too bad. You know, you can miss periodically. Second week, oh, look, I didn't do my weekly review this week. I should probably do something about that. And then the third week, oh, look, I still haven't done my weekly review. But it made me confront the fact that I hadn't done it instead of just it kind of fading off into the mist of time. And so then once I decided, no, this is really something important to me, even though I haven't done it in the last 3 weeks, that I would then, you know, put more effort in it, do it, get it turned around to where, oh, look, I've done it, you know, 7 out of the last 10 weeks. You know, I don't need to be quite so focused on fixing that now. It was really, really powerful. And then I overloaded my app with way more data points than they'd ever imagined someone would put in it, I guess, and crashed my app on New Year's Eve of whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, like 2011, New Year's Eve. And reading their chapter on keeping scores, like, I bet I could recreate that using some other way to keep track of what I'm doing. It was just, I've tried like three other apps, and the one that died on me was just perfect for me. So I've tried a couple of different things. Nothing has quite worked the same way, but I like the idea of, again, having shorter cycles of feedback. It's not just when you get 3 months down the road and go, oh, wait, I'd meant to whatever, you know, be on the productivity book group call, which means I have to plan ahead and buy the book and read it. Instead of going, oh, wow, it's been 6 months and I've listened to all the podcasts, but I haven't ever actually made it to a call. But the shorter cycle just a week, and not in terms of a feeling bad or judgmental or whatever, but as a data point of, oh, look, at some point I said this was important, and I don't seem to be able to actually do it. Uh-huh. Is it really important? Am I facing, you know, massive resistance, or have I just forgotten and I need to reengage with it? So from that perspective and my experience of that year, year and a half that I was doing it really, really consistently every week, it was amazing.
I'm a huge, you know, quantifier of things, and so I love the idea of keeping track. So I'm on board. I'm excited to try out this sort of weekly scorecard once I do get the 12 week year plan set up.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually really excited to hear Margaret your point of view on keeping score, because it's so funny. I was just telling Ray yesterday. I think it was from reading this, Ray, actually, that's what brought it up for me. But I was like, I'm not part of that whole self-quantifying movement or what quantified self movement or whatever, right? And then uh-huh. I was like, I'm sleeping so poorly. Why is that? And then I opened my sleep cycle app. I've been tracking my sleep for a year and a half already.
So, yeah, but you don't track anything now.
And I was like, oh, look at that. Oh, I kind of do track stuff. But I guess I sort of look at that stuff a little bit more organically, and because I do a weekly review, you know, through the GTD system or methodology, I guess I'm doing it naturally. But I agree 100% that it's the short cycles of feedback that are so important. And recognizing it as data instead of doing the whole emotional thing, like, oh, my God, I can't believe I haven't done that again, you know. But like actually sitting down and saying, okay, so clearly what's up with that then? Do I really not?
Yeah.
Is it something that should get delegated? Is it something that should get dropped completely? Does it no longer matter? You know, like, but to do that without the whole, like, oh, my God, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I could see how the score. I could see how the scorecard could make sense. I just it'll be interesting for me for implementation, and I'd be interested to know what app that was you were using, Margaret.
I was using something called Wonderful Day.
Okay.
It was made by a couple of guys in like India, because when it crashed, I emailed them. It was really late in Virginia, and they responded right away.
Okay.
But then they couldn't ever quite come up with why I had managed to blow it up.
Right.
And I was tracking like 25 things, and I'd been doing it for, you know, a year with 10 and 20 data points, and it just blew the whole thing up. And, and visually it just worked for me. And so the other things I've tried have just, even though they have all the same functions, they don't look the same. They don't, you know.
Yeah.
It's just,
I hear you.
Yeah. So,
totally get that.
But in a, you know, and it was kind of in a, it was a step in my weekly review to update my spreadsheet,
mm-hmm.
which is really simple to go from the app and just pick up the, you know, how many did I do this week of each of those things, and have the pretty colors and all that stuff on my spreadsheet and go, oh, okay, look, hey, I've got some momentum going, or this one thing is still dragging. Do I have time this week to really dig into that?
Uh-huh.
And reading about scorekeeping kind of reinvigorated me to go, yeah, that was a really helpful thing that I was doing way back whenever it was that I was doing it that I've kind of forgotten about doing. So perhaps in the next call I'll say I've recreated my spreadsheet.
Well, hope so. Yeah, one of the really interesting things for me is that, like for you, Michelle, I tend to so dissimilar. I track everything. I'm an over tracker, right? I just love capturing data, and the more data points, the better. Not necessarily because I want to look at it, but what I want is technology to just look at the data and give me feedback in real time, so that I can make better choices. So my ultimate goal is that, you know, for the quantified self movement specifically, what I really hope for the movement is that technology is able to take this data securely and with, you know, responsibly and feed that back to me. Similar to, like, you know, don't you use the Walk app? Is that what it's called?
Moves. I was just going to say.
Move, yes.
Yes, and I love it. Yes, exactly. How not true is it that I do not see the quantified self thing?
That's great. But it's, you know,
so
it's like one of those
move?
Things that, want to explain, Michelle?
Oh, sure. Move, well, okay, I will put a disclaimer. Apparently, Facebook has bought it, or somebody, I forget exactly, yeah. I think it was Facebook. So all the privacy that I used to feel about it is maybe gone. So that's something to consider. But basically, it just runs in the background. You can put it in, like, light battery use mode. It just tracks your movement, like, I guess GPS or something like that, right? So it because of the speed of your movement, it knows whether you're, like, on a bus or on the train, or if you're walking, or if you're running, or if you're biking, or if you're sitting. And it basically tells, so you get these, and it has a really nice visual. So you end up with these little bubbles at the top of the, you know, and it tracks throughout the day. So at any time when you look, it'll say you've walked, you know, 3.8 miles, and then you compress the little bubble, and it'll say 45 minutes, and it's this many calories, and, you know, that sort of information.
Okay.
So it's great when, you know, you're out and you're moving about, and you're like, oh, you know, and especially for, you know, if you're starting to get into exercising kick, you just want to see what it also does is if you can go out to a week view, and then it'll also show you, like, this was the best day for your running for this month. You know, you ran you cycled the farthest this month and stuff like that. So it's really nice visual. So it's good feedback and just data,
yeah.
You know.
and so applications like that I want to just be seamless in my world. So, you know, I've been looking at the different Fitbits and the other kinds of you know, toys like that. Not toys, but, you know, gadgets that track.
Well, I've got a Fitbit, and I really am liking it. It's not the most fashionable object, but I love, too, that it does the sleep tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so okay, so it's a very similar thing, but it sounds like Moves just uses your phone.
Yeah. Right.
And like, it's not 100% accurate either, you know, because sometimes it's like it's telling me that I'm at the supermarket when I'm home. I'm like, okay, clearly something's wrong today. But
we all have off days.
Yeah, and if you're not using it for, like, exact, I just want to have a sense of, like, roughly, you know. And
yeah.
It's also an easy way for me to sort of go back and be like, oh, right, that was the day that I went here, there, and the other place. You know, I kind of use it for a bunch of stuff, and it's more fun for me than anything specific.
Yeah, and I think it's still there's a positive productivity impact on your life because of that, you know, making something fun, making something engaging, and that's what I want for the entire quantified self movement. I want the technology to facilitate me making better choices for living well, as opposed to me having to sit around with a spreadsheet trying to quantify what I did and how I did it, you know?
Yeah.
Which
right, that's the whole thing. It's seamless. Yeah, it's seamless in the background, and there's very little input that I have to do, which makes it great.
And right now, that technology is doing that really good on the biological things, you know, like fitness or those kinds of things. I'd like to see them get better at nutrition and at, you know, other kinds of things that impact our lives. You know, so if I go grocery shopping, it should be able to track that in relationship to my nutrition and my fitness, and then broaden that out into, you know, my sleep, and which, you know, I use Sleep Cycle also, thanks to you. And, you know, I enjoy that information. I want to see all of those things blending together much more efficiently, just to give me, you know, like, hey, Ray, maybe you should get up and walk for a bit now, and maybe you might want to go to the gym, you know, later today versus now because you just ate. You know, knowing all of those data points and then synthesizing them is really important to me. I think it helps me live a great life, and I want to be able to have that done in the background without me having to do so much of the data entry. And then if it can broaden into my personal productivity world, you know, in terms of my systems, that would be even better, looking at my calendar and you know, again, synthesizing that data and giving me back better information, that would be fantastic. But we'll get there. We'll get there. And so that wraps up in terms of time. Thank you so much. As is the tradition here on Productivity Book Group, to end every call with my favorite quotation from our book's reading selection, it is. So Brian Pinarello and Michael Lennington say, quote, "Vision is the starting point of all high performance. You create things twice, first mentally, then physically," end quote. So thank you both to Moran and Lennington for that. And so that finishes out this Productivity Book Group discussion for the 12-week year, covering chapters 1 through 13. And so our next call will be on Saturday, June 7th at noon Eastern Time, where we will cover our second discussion, which is chapters 14 through 21, basically the second half of the book. I mean, you know, chapter 14 starts into part 2 of the book, but you know what I mean. And so we'll be handling the latter half of the book of the 12-week year. All information for Productivity Book Group is posted to the productivitybookgroup.org, and the podcasts are archived there under episodes. Our upcoming books are posted for the next few months on the website under upcoming books. And so if you want to read ahead or plan to read a book a little bit more slowly, you can go on over to the website and check those upcoming reading selections out. And I'll be announcing the second half of 2014's reading selections in a few days. So check out the website in a couple of days, and you'll see the 2014 second half reading selections there as well. I hope you'll all be able to join us for the live call on June 7th at noon Eastern Time. You can also subscribe in iTunes or elsewhere to listen to the archives. Feel free to comment and share. Thank you, everyone, who joined me here on the live call, and here's to your productive life. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Have a great weekend. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.